Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Stephen Scott, your host for the next hour. And yes, this is The Weekly Connect. This is the programme that is for you if you're blind or partially sighted and you have a view on, well, anything, really. You can share your opinions on life as a blind or partially sighted person. You know, it can be good, it can be bad, and it can be downright ugly at times, can't it? Well, this is the programme that gives you the opportunity to really talk about all of that. And this hour, we are going to be focusing in on some key areas. One particular area is cataract surgeries. Now, there's a lot of talk in the news about this, and there's conversation around the funding for cataract treatments, and also the availability in some areas as well. Now, we ran a report on this last year, and we are going to be talking about this again here today on The Weekly Connect. So stick around for that. If you are someone who's living with cataract treatment looming, or you have a cataract that isn't ready yet to be treated on, then this might be a conversation you want to hear. Also coming up this hour, we are going to be checking in with our RNIB Connect team as they travel around the UK talking to you lovely people. And we are going to be talking about tech as well. Yes, Kevin Satisabal joins us from the Royal London Society for the Blind. He talks to us about some technology and in particular social media and the benefits of social media to blind and partially sighted people. Interesting topic. But we actually go abroad for our first feature this week, and we hear from Julie Woods from New Zealand. Now, Julie lost her sight completely when she was 37 due to Stargardt's disease, but it hasn't stopped her living her life. In fact, her life has changed entirely from the point of losing her sight. Here's Julie's story.
Hi, I'm that blind woman, Julie Woods, and I live in Dunedin, New Zealand, which is the Edinburgh of the South. So I was born totally sighted, the youngest child of three, and at the age of 18, in my last year of high school, I noticed the print on the blackboard was shimmering. And it started to move further away from me. I went down to my local hospital and was diagnosed with Stargardt's disease. So I became partially sighted at the age of 18. I spent the next 4 years at university, I'll say suffering a Bachelor of Commerce degree. Started in the back row of the lecture theatre, ended up in the front, but carried on nonetheless, and then went and worked in Wellington, in our capital city, and worked for the government. It wasn't until 1997, when I was 31 years of age and I was married, I was back in Dunedin with my husband and I had two boys, aged 3 and 1, that I noticed the vinyl in our bathroom was shimmering. And this time I was diagnosed with inflammation of the retina, and within 3 months I lost most of my remaining vision. And it was a time where I felt powerless and overwhelmed and had no idea of how I was going to cope. And fortunately, I got to the point where I was eligible for membership at the Blind Foundation in New Zealand. And that was like coming home and finding my brothers and sisters. And it was okay that I couldn't see. And I began to see them do things that I thought I could never do. And that was another important step for me, to actually watch and observe those other blind people read with their fingers, read with their ears, use their white cane, travel on planes, cook, clean, iron, mow their lawns, use chainsaws, do all the things that I thought blind people couldn't do. So I guess I brought my own stereotype of blindness to being blind, and it wasn't until I mixed with them that I really noticed that actually it was my limiting beliefs and I needed to shift those. And as I said, watching other blind people do the things I thought I couldn't was hugely liberating. I was at the Blind Foundation one day wandering up the corridor and I was approached by the recreation officer, and she said to me, "Julie, we're taking a group of blind people away cross-country skiing. Would you like to come?" And I thought, cross-country skiing? That sounds really dangerous, you know, and something might happen to me. What if I fell over? And, you know, a bunch of blind people, that's a bit random. I was still kind of in that stage. And I politely declined. And I went home and I sat on the safety of my couch that night and I thought, you stupid woman, what kind of blind person are you going to make if you turn down opportunities that come your way? So from that moment on, I decided to turn my no into why not. And if anyone asked me to do anything rather than say no, I would say why not. I would try it once. If I didn't like it, I wouldn't have to do it again, but at least it would be an informed choice. So saying why not has led me to do many, many things that I possibly would have said no to in the past. I guess the most notable one was in 2001 when my husband left our family. The boys were 7 and 5 and I was now a single blind parent. The Blind Foundation asked me if I wanted to learn Braille and I said, why not? And I went out to the Blind Foundation once a week and I fell in love with Braille. I found it liberating once again to be able to read with my fingers, to be reunited with the written word. And I also fell in love with Louis Braille. So when it came time for the international blind community to celebrate his 200th birthday in Paris on the 4th of January 2009, I wanted to be there. So I said why not to going, raise some money and headed over to Paris with my new partner Ron. And on the 4th of January, climbed to the top of the Eiffel Tower, got out in the lift and poked my head through the railing and called out over the city of Paris, "Happy birthday, Louis Braille!" When we came home through Egypt and Jordan and visited Petra, which is, of course, one of the 7 wonders of the world. And I said to Ron, "I wonder what the other 6 are." So we set ourselves a goal of visiting the 7 wonders of the world, which in 2014 we completed when we visited South America, going through Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, Machu Picchu in Peru, and finishing off with our 7th wonder, Chichen Itza in Mexico. So that was a pretty amazing accomplishment. And then in 2014, I actually got melanoma and the test results came back clear. So we left the hospital and went round to the travel agent and we wrote ourselves a bucket list that included places that I'd always wanted to go to and Ron the same. So we both set out on July the 4th, 2015 and visited 20 countries in 107 days. And people often ask me, how can you sightsee when you can't see? And I say, because I can smell, hear, taste and touch. And on that trip, I smelt fermenting barley in the whisky distillery at Glenmorangie in the Highlands of Scotland. I stood on the bridge at Westminster and heard Big Ben chime 12. I ate German pretzels at the oldest cloister brewery in the world, and I touched the Liberty Bell in the United States of America. So it was a wonderful opportunity. At that stage, I'd visited 49 countries, and earlier this year, on the 1st of February, it was my 50th birthday, and I said to Ron, wouldn't it be great to do 50 countries by the time I was 50? I said, would you like to go to Samoa? And he said, why not? So we went to Samoa, and I spent my 50th birthday in Samoa. So saying why not has taken me to lots of countries around the world. It's made me walk 9 half marathons. And it's enabled me to referee 3 games of nude touch rugby. It has made me write a book, cycle the Otago Rail Trail, which is 150 kilometres on a tandem bike, talk to people all around the country, to go up in a hot air balloon, to do all that stuff. But it's meant that I've been open to the opportunities that have come my way as a blind woman, and for that I'm truly grateful.
Such an honest account of life with sight loss, isn't it? And really interesting when Julie talks there about the idea of losing her sight and that bridge point, if you like, losing her sight, going to partial sight, and then having no vision at all, and how her life changed for the better when she lost all of her sight. And I think as someone who is visually impaired myself, who's partially sighted, I can kind of get that to some degree. And that's very difficult, I guess, for people who have full sight to understand. You know, how can you be happier being blind? Well, I think the word happy is maybe pushing it, but I think it is a place where you finally succumb to all of the things that hold you back. I mean, in my case, using computers, for example, I know I need to use a screen reader, but I hold off because I can see a little bit of the screen. And even though it hurts to do it, and even though it's annoying, and even though I don't always get it right, I still rather do that than give my life over to the screen reader. Whereas if you lose all your vision, well, you have to. And maybe that just makes life not easier or happier, but just makes it, maybe you become a bit more settled by it, I guess. Very interesting. Share your thoughts. What do you think about that? Maybe you feel the opposite. Tell us what you think. We'd love to hear from you. theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk is our email address. You can find me, by the way, on Twitter if you want to say hello. I'm at Tech Talker Steve. You might guess what that's from. Yeah, our tech show. We do tend to talk about tech on there, but you know, generally we talk about all kinds of blind issues as well. So, you know, if you want to join the conversation, then please do. You can find RNIB Connect Radio on Facebook and Twitter as well. Twitter, you'll find it at RNIB Radio, and Facebook, just search for RNIB Connect Radio. Simple as that. Join the conversation. Send us a message through Facebook. A lot of people doing that now as well. Now, one area that we like to talk about on the show is health and well-being. And it's something we talk about a lot across RNIB Connect Radio. It's very important, I think, to sort of keep our mental health good as much as possible, especially if you're going through sight loss. And to do that, you know, getting out and about often is difficult enough for blind people. But I think the challenge is sometimes knowing what to do. And when you hear stories of people running, you know, Paralympics and, you know, jumping, taking part in the Paralympics or getting involved in this event or that event and world championships and climbing mountains and all that stuff, it all sounds wonderful, but it sounds incredibly unachievable for the average person like me. So what we've done is we've put together some of your views that you've sent in on your thoughts on health and well-being and what you do to be happy and enjoy nature, get out for a walk, all that kind of thing. Here's what you had to say about health and well-being.
Hello, I'm Colin, Colin Ann Twiss, and I have a business called Fieldsman Trails, and I'm based in North Wales.
Hi, my name's Hazel McFarlane. I work with RNIB Scotland. I have no sight at all, total sight loss.
Hello, my name is Steve Beavers. I'm registered as severely sight impaired. I'm categorised for sport as a B3 player. I live in Wirral, which is in Merseyside, across the water from Liverpool, and that's where I play my golf.
What I really love to do in terms of keeping fit is running in as much as possible. So I love doing ultras, which are any mileage over 26 miles. I've done from 33 to 56 mile ultras and marathons and half marathons.
Some 20-odd years ago now, I was made redundant, but I seemed to know what I wanted to do, and that was to just put the countryside down in sound for visually impaired and blind people, because being a walker and somebody who loved maps, I was very keen to take some of my friends and acquaintances out walking with me to show them the countryside. And believe you me, in walking with visually impaired and blind people, I have seen more in the countryside by stopping, touching, feeling and smelling items along the way.
Blind golf is actually virtually the same as fully sighted golf. The only difference is that we have a sighted guide along with us all the time. And the sighted guide can do many things for the golfer, depending on the level of vision. So for a totally blind golfer, you will have to guide the golfer to the ball to make sure that they're pointing in the right direction, to give advice on which club to use. Once the player's set up, then it's down to the blind golfer to hit the ball. Then the sighted guide will get involved again with a description of the contact that's been made and perhaps most importantly, where the ball's gone.
I've got no sight at all. So I've got four key guide runners that I run with from my local running club. In terms of walking and hill walking, I've got a couple of friends that really enjoy that, so we do that together. In terms of coastal rowing, that's a great sport for blind people because you just listen to the rhythm of the oar. I row in a five-person skiff, and if you listen to the rhythm of the oars, you just get into the rhythm, and that's you, you're off. In terms of cycling, I've always got pilots who go in the front of my bike, and I've got a custom-made tandem, so the back of it's custom-made for me. And in terms of swimming, when I'm swimming, I do the crawl stroke, and so I use my pinky and my toe to find the rope marker on my right-hand side on the way down the pool. And when I'm swimming up the pool, I use my pinky and my toe on my left-hand foot and hand to find the rope marker so that I've always, you know, got the rope marker to guide my direction.
I understand that perhaps a lot of people are full of apprehension about going into the great outdoors, but you don't have to go up a mountain, you don't have to go into river valleys. Go into your local park initially and you will find as much there as there is in the great outdoors. The great outdoors can be small, can be local, your neighbourhood park, even your back garden. Get out there, feel the stems, feel the new buds and listen to the birds as they are setting up territories and singing.
I enjoy playing golf so much because it's a way of being competitive in a sport that I can enjoy, but I'm able to play with and against many other people. I particularly enjoy the blind golf because it brings me into contact with other people with visual impairment who also have the same interest in golf.
I think sometimes people are really intimidated about joining their local running clubs, and quite often running clubs will have options for new beginning runners. But I've also taken part in Park Run, and they are fantastic. They're so inclusive. You've got loads of people there, all different running abilities. You've got people there who are running with their dogs, their kids. And it's just a lovely, lovely, inclusive atmosphere. And there's usually park runs in lots of different areas.
One of the main reasons for coming to join and play in blind golf is the opportunity to play with and against other blind golfers, both in this country, in a regular match against Scotland, and tournaments around the world.
No need to do a Bear Grylls. Just be yourself and be confident.
So there you go. Get out for a walk. Try a bit of golf. You never know. You might enjoy it. I tried a bit of blind golf once or twice. I smashed a BMW's front window when I first learned how to drive in golf, as in, you know, hit the ball. I was standing the wrong way around, hit the ball straight into the car park and straight through a BMW's window. I did pay for the damage. I did pay for it, but yeah, I think I paid for it more in my confidence. I didn't go back to that game, unfortunately. But yeah, it is something that is good to try. And getting it for a walk and just being healthy that way is very easy to do. So yeah, tell us what you do to keep yourself mentally well. You can get in touch, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now, we've been talking a lot on RNIB Connect Radio about cataract surgery. And there are incredible waiting lists now for this. But the cost of cataract treatment, you might not realise, is actually relatively low. But the waiting lists for surgery are up to 15 months in some areas. Now, last year we heard from Gloria and Robin, who talked to the Weekly Connect about their experiences waiting for treatment.
I began to have problems in April or so with vision. I didn't think about it, but then I noticed that on the left side of my glasses, I've had those for years and years for distance, I noticed it was all fogged. And I thought, oh, I'll probably need a new pair. So I went to the optometrist in June, and she said to me, you have a cataract in the center of your lens. And would you like to have surgery, you know, because it's at the level that you could have surgery. And I said, sure. So she sent the paperwork to my GP, and he sent it to the ophthalmologist. And I went there in a few weeks, and I thought, oh, this is good. It seems efficient. However, when I went to the interview with the ophthalmologist and the examination, he simply said to come back in 3 months. And since I was having problems seeing, I thought, I was quite shocked at that. At this point, I called up the RNIB helpline, and I said, is this going to affect my eyesight permanently if I don't have an operation soon? And they said, they just asked me about it in the visual acuity, of course, and asked me to get that from the optometrist because it ordinarily isn't on your prescription, that particular statistic. So it turned out it was within the threshold, the RNIB told me, and so they contacted the hospital on behalf of me and asked if I could go on the waiting list because I was having problems using the computer, having problems going down the stairs with depth perception, and having it was impacting my life in a lot of ways. I went to see the consultant again about 10 days ago or so, and he did put me on the waiting list, but only after we dealt with the hospital, only after the RNIB had contacted them. And I was quite anxious there, and I also thought it was extremely worrying to have to contact the RNIB about this, because there are going to be a lot of people who can't do that, who haven't thought of that, or who aren't the type who would, etc. So I'm just concerned. I know this is a nationwide problem, the wait for cataract surgery, and I was quite upset. I'm still going to have to wait until, I don't know, about January, and I was told about this in June, so it's quite alarming.
Now, Robin, in your case, you eventually did get treatment.
Yes, probably a little bit different, Stephen, because I'm someone who's had cataracts, oh my gosh, probably most of my life, to be honest. But I've not been able to operate on it before because of other complications of my vision, because I've had collarbone with the iris and also corneal ulcer. So it's been something that they've been reluctant to do up until this year, really. I mean, I had a consultation in, oh my gosh, May this year at the Vitreo Retinal Department in Moorfields Eye Hospital, and they said it might be able to do an operation at this point because they had fairly new operational procedure where they said they might be able to remove the actual lens from my eye and take the cataract out at the same time through an operation called a vitreo lens ectomy, I think is the procedure name. So this, I had a consultation in May, and they said that they'd be able to operate within 6 to 8 weeks, and I had the operation done on July the 15th at Moorfields, which was very successful. So I guess in my circumstances, I've been very lucky, really.
Yeah, were you alarmed that you wouldn't have a chance to have treatment? Or I suppose it was Moorfields, which has it has capacity as a specialist a hospital, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I used to be under Dorster Eye Hospital Gloria for many years, until about 13 years ago. And my vision had become very bad then. And they said they couldn't do anything else for me. So I asked to be referred to Moorfields at that stage.
Right.
And I had a consultation there back in 2003. And they decided that I would be able to have a partial corneal graft, which I had done that year, which restored some of my vision. And I've been with Moorfields now for the last 13 years, you know, so I guess I'm lucky to be under what is, I guess, one of the top eye hospitals, really.
Yes, I mean, it must be, as you had other eye problems as well. I mean, have you had a cataract taken out as well this year?
Yeah, this is what I had done.
Oh, this is a more complex one.
Then. Yes, yeah, not straightforward cataract surgery, which it would be with, I guess, other people. I mean, everybody's circumstances are different anyway,
yes,
you know.
So. Yes.
Like yourself, you know. But it is worrying, isn't it, when your vision becomes very cloudy.
It is. It just means that you're missing out, I find, on a lot of things that go on, really.
This is right, you know.
Yes, it almost seems like, you know, there's a curtain up or a partial curtain up in front of you. And if it's a process that isn't taking too long, it's even more anxiety-producing, I find.
It's frustrating, Gloria, isn't it, to be honest?
Yes.
Do you notice a difference on, like, a weekly or daily difference with your vision, or...?
Well, it'd be weekly, I suppose. It's certainly, yeah, it's just, well, I think it's inevitable, isn't it, until you have a lens replacement, really, isn't it?
The worst thing is having to wait, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. I think, really, that, you know, I think that these should be done within a month or something like that, especially since cataract operation, in fact, is cheap, you know, compared to a knee replacement or some such, you know.
And it'd be more handy if they could just give you, like, a precise date, even if you had to wait, say, a couple of months, or you would know it was going to happen, wouldn't you?
Yeah. It just seems that, you know, there isn't, you don't feel as if you have control over things. I really feel, especially since the cost is lower, and it would make a huge impact on your quality of life, don't you think?
That's right, yes. You know, it make a huge difference, really, to be fair. But hopefully, you know, you'll soon hear from the hospital regarding your operation, really.
Well, I hope so, yes, I hope so. I know I like to go to the theatre, and I went to see a play with Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
Yes, I know.
A couple of months. It was called No Man's Land, I think. And I found that I couldn't see the faces well, and I was sitting in the stalls. And
were you fairly close to?
Yeah, I was fairly close, and I just found it. You know, it had a real impact on my enjoyment of the play. And these are great actors too.
That's
privileged to see them, and it was a real shame. It's just one example of many.
Yeah, you feel you're missing out on what you're watching, really, don't you? You know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you really do.
What would be the first thing, Gloria, you would do once you've had your cataract operations?
Well, I think I'd probably just go to the park. I live near a huge park, and just have a chance to see things properly. I think that would be beautiful.
Especially this time of year, Gloria, with the autumn colours and different things.
Yes. Well, if it happens by
That's
then,
right.
You know, it could be January. I would think it might be, given the timescales I've been told, you know.
Well, I wish you both well. Gloria, I hope you get treatment soon.
Okay, thanks very much. And I hope everything stays okay for you, Robin.
Thanks very much, Gloria, for your kind wishes. Fingers crossed it will do, you know. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I hope so. Thank you.
Nice to speak with you as well.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, you might have heard about all of the Connect events that are happening around the UK. Well, there's another one taking place for blind and partially sighted people to come together and talk about all kinds of issues. This one in particular is happening in the northwest of England in December, Friday the 1st to Monday the 4th of December at the Windermere Manor Hotel. And if you're interested in getting involved, well, you might want to hear more about it. Well, thankfully for us, we have Danielle Colcombe, our community facilitator, speaking to one of RNIB's connectors about the upcoming event.
Hi, Mike. It's really good to speak to you. How are you?
I'm great, Danielle. Yourself?
I'm okay. I'm really excited about this forthcoming event, and that's why we're here to have a chat about this. So tell me what you've organised, when you've organised it, and how can we get in touch?
Okay, well, we're in the Northwest as part of Connect, which hopefully you guys who are listening and have been engaging in, you've been meeting together and you've been looking at ways to improve the lives and accessibility for the visually impaired in the area. We've organised a weekend from the 1st to the 4th of December at Windermere Manor Hotel. A great price as well, at just £119 per person. That is based on two sharing the twin or a double. There are some single rooms as well, but once they're gone, there will be a single person supplement as well on top of that. But what have we got planned for the weekend? Well, on the Friday at tea time-ish, when we arrive, you got canapes and a glass of wine or something equivalent. On Friday night after the meal, we've got wine tasting and give you a chance to settle back, get to know each other over some wine. The Saturday night, we have got a cabaret, so that'll be an entertainer. And on Sunday, we've got planned a karaoke evening as well. So there's quite a lot to do sort of within the hotel. And we are hoping to have a Sunday afternoon event, more likely a trip out somewhere, maybe a boat ride or something like that to be sorted. That will be additional cost. But one of the main reasons for the event is to come together on Saturday to spend the day doing a variety of things we're putting together, and we want your ideas as well. So we're looking at IT, maybe some sessions on getting you up to speed on certain things.
It's great that you mentioned that, Mike, because the Connect community might be quite interested to learn that coming together at an event like this, as well as a great opportunity to network, there's also going to be opportunities to shape how the sessions come together. So we're, like you said, we're very interested in hearing what the community themselves would like to bring to the event. So maybe you could tell us a bit about possible ideas, possible things that people could get involved in, and how they can get in touch with, if they would like to share some of those ideas with us.
Yeah, so on the Saturday, we want you to give your input on things you want. So maybe the type of thing you want to do to help socialise with each other, maybe, you know, things you want to discuss or people you want us to try and invite. All you need to do then is contact Danielle. She will give you her email address in a moment. And we can try and pull that together. But we want to make it relaxed. We want to spend time just relaxing, having a lot of fun, and but getting some networking and other things done at the same time.
And it's a great venue to do that, isn't it, Mike? I've been to Windermere Manor once or twice before, and absolutely, it's a great setting to really, like you said, relax. And I think what's great about this session in particular is it's going to be near Christmas, so we can have like a proper Christmas do going on here.
We can, and if you haven't been to the hotel before, there's plenty of ground, there's areas to exercise your dogs, spending areas, there's sort of two sort of lounge bar areas you can use, so in the evening, depending on what you want to do, quite a nice dining room area as well, and they've even got the swimming pool, so you can go for a bit of a chill out and a swim as well.
And for anyone who's not really familiar with Windermere Manor, you've already explained the facilities, and that's great. We are a very friendly hotel, and you know, I've been there myself, and I understand that they cater for all levels of sight loss, and they will understand and meet your needs and requirements. Is that right, Mike?
They will. I mean, I've been three or four times now in the last couple of years, so I know the staff quite well, and they will. They'll look after you, but give you what you need. If you don't need that, that's fine. You do your own thing. But if you need assistance with things, just ask.
Absolutely. So if you'd like to get in touch with your ideas, I suggest that you email me at connectnorthwest@rnib.org.uk. Now, this is ideas and for the Saturday event, which is our Connect event. Book and information will follow in a second from Mike. But we are really keen for you guys to shape this weekend and to influence how Connect can go forward in the future. So, Mike, if anyone's interested in booking, how do they make that booking with the hotel?
Yeah, what you need to do is booking is direct with the hotel, so there's no point, unfortunately, getting in touch with me or Danielle or anyone else at RNIB. It is direct with the hotel. Their phone number is 01539 445 801. That's 01539 445 801. Booking starts on the 15th of August, so we wanted to make sure you heard this. You probably had an invite as well, so to make it fair, but it is a first come first served. So unfortunately, we would say after the last one we did in 2015, it filled up within a week. So do get in touch straight away and get that booking in, and we do look forward to seeing you and hearing from you, you know, beforehand and at the event.
Absolutely, and great opportunities to meet other people from the Northwest, have a good mingle, socialize, and to hear more about RNIB services as well on the Saturday event. It is a really good opportunity to meet other people who are visually impaired in your local area, so we extend the warm invite, and we hope to see everyone soon.
Look forward to seeing you. Don't forget, you can obviously bring family as well, you know, if you've got partners, etc. You know, someone to come along. You don't expect you all to come on your own if you are on your own. And just make the most of it, and we look forward to hearing you do some karaoke and just getting involved.
I will see you on that karaoke machine, Mike.
That sounds fine with me.
Thanks, Mike.
Not a problem. Thanks, and see you all there.
Thank you to Mike, and that event taking place at the Windermere Manor Hotel in the northwest of England, of course, Friday the 1st to 4th of December 2017. If you want more details, you can contact us here at the programme. We'll put you in touch, the Weekly Connect at rnib.org.uk. Now, coming up, one of our listeners has posed a question. Why is it free to travel on a train in Scotland when it's not free to travel on a train in England? If you're blind or partially sighted, that question is answered for you very soon, and provokes a rather interesting discussion that I'm sure we'll have over the next couple of weeks on that. Also coming up, we're going to hear from you about your concerns on a new app that has been launched by TSB, the bank. Apparently the app isn't particularly accessible. Well, we're going to get your thoughts on that and hear what you've been saying on that topic here on the Weekly Connect in just a moment. But first, on the subject of technology, Kevin Satisabal is here to share his thoughts on the benefits of using social media as a blind or partially sighted person.
Hello, my name is Kevin Satisabal, and I'm the Online Communities Assistant for the Royal London Society for Blind People. I'm totally blind, and I use social media at the charity to promote its events. I also write blogs for the website and news articles. Today I'd like to share with you my top tips on using and getting started with social media. Social media is social, is a real great way to keep in touch with your friends and family, and also to keep up to date with the latest news. Social media has really leveled the playing field and opened up a lot of doors for me as a blind person. In the past, everyone would always be talking about something that they'd glanced in a magazine or something that they'd seen on TV. So it was a lot of visual references that I had no access to. But now, using social media, that's all changed. Facebook's recently released an automatic picture captioning system, so it basically means that when a picture goes up, it tries to tell you what's in the picture. And that's great, because imagine the situation that a lot of blind people have, is that a lot of times we'd be tagged in a picture and people would go off into this great debate about what the picture actually was, but I would have no idea what they were talking about. So a lot of times I couldn't join into that debate. Also, a lot of people are sharing loads of interesting news stories on Facebook and Twitter and other social media platforms, and that causes debate amongst friends. Like, often I'll see a lot of people share an interesting news story and I'll quickly dip in and comment and get the conversation started or join a conversation. The fact that companies are doing their best to make things accessible is really helping visually impaired people to integrate and share their opinions. So how do you get started with social media? Well, first of all, you either need a computer, Mac or PC, or a smartphone with an app. The most popular forms of social media are Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you're into live streaming video from your phone and showing the world live what you're up to, Periscope is probably a good shout, as it's also accessible. So let's look at Facebook. Either on your phone, you download the app, then sign up, add your details, date of birth, and get an account created, and then you start adding your friends that may have Facebook. It sometimes looks through your email contacts and also your phone contacts to let you know who already has Facebook, and then you can get talking. You can do exactly the same thing on a PC by hitting up www.facebook.com. Twitter and the other social media sites also have a similar process. Download the app on the phone or access the relevant websites. Instagram is great for sharing pictures and short 15-second videos. Twitter, you've only got 140 characters to say what you're up to, which makes it a really great platform for live conversations. So you'll often see people put up a hashtag with a program on television. So that means that if you tweet using that hashtag, everyone on Twitter following the hashtag, if they've searched for it, will be able to see your tweet. Facebook is much more private than Twitter, so it's a really great way to stay in touch with friends and family and with the people closest to you. Social media is all about you staying in touch with the people that you care about the most. So don't be scared of it. Go out there and give it a go.
Thanks, Kevin. And don't forget that we have our technology show as well, where you can listen to the thoughts and views of three blind people ranting about technology. Tech Talk is our show, which you can get on RNIB Connect Radio Tuesdays from 1 o'clock, or you can listen on the podcast on Audioboom and iTunes, any of your favourite, even not your favourite podcast players, you can find the show on. Now let's turn to your comments this week. We've had an email in from one of our listeners sharing his thoughts on a new app that has been released by a popular bank.
Hi there, Steve, and the weekly podcast. I have a question. The TSB app has just gone solo. It used to be part of the Lloyds TSB app, but because they've gone their separate ways, they have developed a new app. As for accessibility, nothing whatsoever. And I'm very concerned because I feel that I should be able to use the app like anybody else. And it is still in beta testing, but it's going to be released in September. But the old app, which was very accessible, 100% accessibility, is being shelved. And it's been disconnected by Apple in the middle of September. So I was wondering if you could shed some light on this and see if you could find out why this is the case, why they haven't put the accessibility into it. I have spoken to many people at the bank, at the call centre, and I finally found out after 3 weeks that the app developer is in Barcelona. So I'm just wondering if it's any point sticking around with TSB. But if you could chase that up and find out something and see if some campaigning could be done, that would be great. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Sajid, there, getting in touch with us on email, sending his comments in by recording them onto his phone and then emailing them in. Thank you for doing that, Sajid. We have been in touch with TSB. We're waiting their response. By the time the show was recorded, we didn't have a response, but we will be checking in with TSB and hopefully have more news on that for you next week. It's interesting, we've had quite a lot of comments on our Facebook page about websites that have become less accessible. If you've experienced anything like that in the past couple of weeks, then please do get in touch with us and tell us what you think. A lot of companies are refreshing their websites, changing them, and that can have impacts on familiarity of layout of websites for blind people, but also it can have an impact on the accessibility capability of the website. Is it still as accessible as it once was if they've added new features? You can tell us your thoughts. If you've had an experience of similar, then do email in theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now, Fern Lullum is a radio presenter and podcaster, and she has prepared a little report for us for this week's programme. She wants to pose a question to us around travel and independent travel for blind and partially sighted people.
How can a disabled person get to work in the morning without paying in Scotland but not in England? Pass? Or rather, concessionary pass? My name's Fern Lullum. I'm registered blind, I live in East Sussex, and I've got a concessionary bus pass. This allows me free travel on buses. For me, getting my bus pass was the equivalent of passing the driving test. Freedom to get wherever I need to get, whenever I need to get there. Or so you would think. Unless you happen to live in certain English counties, including East Sussex. The English National Concessionary Travel Scheme was introduced in 2008 and allows free bus travel for disabled people. It is administered by travel concession authorities. In other words, county councils, London boroughs, unitary authorities, and passenger transport executives. The scheme is a huge benefit to many disabled people like me. Not just on a practical level, but it is also mentally and emotionally liberating and acknowledges our value as members of the community. Personally, I can use my bus pass to get to the local shops at the weekend. I can go to meet my friends in the town in the evenings, and I can visit places of interest throughout East Sussex. This is wonderful, and it increases both my own and my friends' expectations of my ability to be independent. But there is one place I cannot use my bus pass to get to, and it is the one place I need it for the most. My job starts at 8:30 a.m, meaning I need to catch a bus at about 7:45 a.m. What I didn't mention earlier is that the English National Concessionary Travel Scheme only allows free travel at off-peak times. That's after 9:30 a.m, Monday to Friday. There is a reason it is called the English National Concessionary Travel Scheme, and that is because in other countries in the UK, free travel is allowed throughout the day, not just at off-peak times. Not only that, but some travel concession authorities in England also allow free travel throughout the day, including peak times. For example, Transport for London recognises that disabled people have jobs and busy lives and should be allowed to access buses free of charge at all times. So we have the legendary postcode lottery situation, where disabled people are in the hands of their local travel concession authority, and it could mean the difference between holding down a job or not. According to the RNIB, 2/3 of visually impaired people of working age are not in employment, and difficulty in travelling to work could be a contributing factor in this unacceptable statistic. So why did the government decide that the English National Concessionary Travel Scheme should require travel authorities to provide free bus travel at off-peak times only? And more importantly, what message does this give to everyone about the government's expectations of the lifestyles of disabled people? The clear implication is that disabled people have no reason to be using public transport before 9:30 a.m, when everyone else is rushing off to work. By definition, this assumes that they are not employed, perpetuating a misinformed stereotype. But let's remember that some travel concession authorities in England have chosen to go further than the requirement placed upon them by the government and allow free bus travel at peak times too. My travel concession authority, East Sussex County Council, on the other hand, along with many other English county councils, have decided to restrict free bus travel to off-peak times. Why? I initially thought it must be a financial consideration, as travel concession authorities are required by law to reimburse bus operators for carrying concessionary passengers. I assumed that peak fares must be more expensive than off-peak fares, therefore achieving a saving by restricting concessionary travel to off-peak times. When I rang my local bus operator, Stagecoach, I was surprised to be told that adult fares are the same regardless of the time of day or night. So if the cost of travel is no more at peak times, perhaps this is not a financial issue. Are disabled people restricted to off-peak bus travel due to overcrowding on buses at peak times? This does not seem to be a logical reason either, as there are no restrictions later on in the day when people are coming home from work. And in any case, why should disabled bus pass holders have any less right to be on buses at peak times in the morning than anyone else? I spoke to my local county councillor, Judy Rogers, about the situation, and she said, "I am absolutely horrified to learn that your bus pass does not allow access to buses at peak times." She agreed that the message this gives out is that disabled people are unlikely to be employed, and that this assumption is offensive to the disabled community. Judy has promised to look into the matter for me, and I look forward to hearing from her in the near future. I would like to think that by highlighting this issue, the English National Concessionary Travel Scheme could be extended to include free bus travel at all times throughout England, to bring it in line with Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, and other forward-thinking travel concession authorities in England. This would promote inclusion for all and raise expectations in everyone.
So that's Fern's thoughts on independent travel and travel concessionary schemes that are sort of patchy around the UK. What do you think generally about travel? Is it as easy as it should be? Could it be easier? How could it be easier? Well, share your thoughts. You can email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now, we have a major team of community facilitators who go around the country and speak to you as blind and partially sighted people. Some of them are blind and partially sighted themselves, and they like to go out and speak to you on a whole wide range of topics, but also to encourage people to set up their own groups and do things, get out there and see the world as much as can be done. Well, Sophie Fox is one of those community facilitators, and she recently, and it is a hard life, let's be honest, she had to go out on a boat on a nice day and spend some time with some lovely blind and partially sighted people. Yeah, it is difficult, I know, but it had to happen. But this was her conversation.
I'm hanging out with a group of people on a lovely boat. Anila, do you want to explain why we're here?
We are here enjoying a lovely boat trip, going to stop at a pub for some food and then come back as well. We were already worried that it was going to rain, but actually the weather has turned out decent. The sun has even come out for us, so that's a bonus. And we're all standing outside at the moment, and those that can are admiring the view, and those that can't are just enjoying the atmosphere.
Listening to view.
enjoying the atmosphere. We've got some new people with us today as well in the group, so that's good. And they're all standing around me, so they can all say hello.
Hello.
How are you guys finding it?
Yeah, no, it's really good. I love boat trips, even though I can't swim. I always figure you're near the water, there's lots of lifeboats, so you're safe anyway.
Excellent.
So, but yeah, it's nice just to be out and kind of in the calm for a change, which it is really nice and peaceful here.
It is really peaceful, and also it's our first time that we've done something away from the RNIB building as well, our first outside venture. So I think it's going quite well. What do you guys think?
It's fantastic. The only problem, I forget my fishing rod. So I can't catch a fish.
If you've got some string, you can borrow my cane and hang it over the end.
Well, I was thinking about my shoelace.
two new people, our youngest members actually today, Buzzy and Charlotte. Would you guys like to say anything?
Hi.
You're on the spot.
Yeah, it's just really nice getting to know people, getting to meet different people, and just nice to see how everyone's getting on. Yeah. Yeah,
Charlotte's been being an amazing help today and guiding people and being a fantastic volunteer as well.
She has.
And I'm Basir, and yeah, it's my first time doing on it, being on a Connect event, and it's going really well, really enjoying it, and just enjoying the atmosphere and meeting new people, and it's going really well. Yeah, just really liking it.
And actually, he wants his email address added, Sophie.
Oh, yes, brilliant. It's worked.
Excellent.
And if you ever wanted to know what RNIB Connect is all about, that's it. You know, it's just about people who are blind and partially sighted getting together, doing things, and, you know, RNIB are here to give a bit of encouragement, but really it's you that takes the lead, and that's what it's all about. That is what RNIB Connect is all about, and you can find out more about it by checking out rnib.org.uk/connect. Now, another thing that a lot of our community connectors are doing, and these are volunteers who are involved in their local communities to quite a degree, getting involved in setting up events and such like. Campaigning is one area where a lot of blind people are getting into, and you can understand why when you begin to learn the number of challenges and problems that appear before you as a blind or partially sighted person. It's not all problems, but there are problems that exist and they must be dealt with. And one particular area that is a concern for a lot of blind people is just getting out shopping and, you know, doing the kind of general stuff. You know, going shopping in a supermarket or going shopping in a big shopping centre can be quite a challenge. You imagine having no sight and you're trying to find that shop or that place or that item in the store. Well, there's one thing that a lot of technology companies are doing now in developing is called beacons. And these beacons go into shopping centres and shops and allow someone to navigate around that store or that shopping centre with their smartphone. It's an incredible piece of technology. Think about it like indoor GPS. Well, Padma Cherian is one of our community connectors, and she's been instrumental in making sure that in her local area, these beacons are actually starting to be used.
Hello, I'm Padma Cherian. I'm a volunteer campaign coordinator for RNIB in Milton Keynes. Beacon system basically is a navigation assistance for the visually impaired and even sighted people for that matter. Beacons are like smoke alarms in you have in our house, and they will be on the each shop in our shopping center. And as I go past with a free app on my phone will tell me which shop I'm going past.
So it's an app for your phone?
That's right, yes.
Okay. You've recently been campaigning to have this system installed in your local shopping centre in Milton Keynes. Tell me about that.
We have a big shopping centre and it is quite famous. People come from far and wide. And they have provided mobility assistance for people with mobility issues. And there are hearing loops for the people who are hard of hearing. But there is no help for the visually impaired. So I went and saw the management, Centre MK management, asking if they could provide such help. They said they would do that, but they are very, very slow in forthcoming with solutions. So we have a smart MK Open University, which is in Milton Keynes, and the Community Action. They have a project for providing funding for some innovative projects. So I applied for funding for a demonstration of the beacon system, and I have won the funding.
Congratulations, you've won the funding. So what is the next step?
The next step is to get permission from the Centre MK management to hold a demonstration, and we are going to film it, show it to the prospective funders for installation of the beacon system throughout the shopping centre.
Padma Cherian there speaking to Leanne Coyle, and you know, certainly great to see that kind of technology being used in such a positive and meaningful way. And that is it for the Weekly Connect for this week. Just a reminder, you can email us at any time, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Go on, why not send us a piece of audio? Send us your thoughts. Maybe interview a friend of yours for the show. Why not? Get in touch, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. We'll be back same time next Monday.